Graham's dressed all in black like a true pirate, and he's sitting next to Tony here. And Graham, what brings you here to Apollo Bay?
We've come here to see if we can fill our coffers with gold for their pirate ship.
Ah, I see. So you're going to loot the town?
Well, that's the general plan, Deb, yes. we're sailing around in Notorious, which is a recreation of a 15th century vessel of exploration, and this weekend we're in Apollo Bay, yeah.
Yes, it's very exciting down at the wharf this weekend, and you can actually go down and have a look at this magnificent ship. How long are you going to be here for, Graham?
We'll be in Apollo Bay and open for Saturday, Sunday and Monday. We may stay longer, but definitely those 3 days, and we'll be open for between the hours of 10 and 4.
Okay, what is it, $25 to go and see the ship, or?
Well, if you like, but we do let people on for $5 for adults and 2 for children.
Oh, that sounds like a very fair price, because it's a very interesting looking vessel. So, Graham, can you tell us a little bit about the vessel?
Well, Notorious is my own creation. I've built her over 10 years at our property in Bushfield. She has been entirely built from reclaimed Monterey cypress, which are the windbreak trees on the farms around there. They're sort of all getting a bit old now, and they're unpopular with the farmers, so every year hundreds of tonnes of them are pushed up and burnt. And we salvaged about 300 tonnes of these logs. We had excavators in unstacking their bonfires, and took it all to our property in Bushfield and milled it all up and built Notorious.
Wow, fantastic. How long did that take you? How many years was the building process?
It took 9 years full-time work for the actual build. There was 2 years research prior to starting. There's very little known about these ships. They didn't build to plans at all in the 15th century. All ships were just built by eye, and they were never documented as we do today. And in the case of a caravel, they've never found the remains of one anywhere in the world. So they're a little bit of an enigma. So it took 2 years research. During that time, I did the plans and everything that was required to start.
And good on you for reclaiming all that cypress, which it is amazing when you drive around the Western District and see it all piled up, ready to put all that carbon into the atmosphere instead of using it like you've done. So, well done.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's a terrible waste. We really hate to see it being burnt. We originally started collecting it to make furniture. We did some research on it and found out that the reason it's in this area is they began planting it in the 1850s in New Zealand to replace their kauri timber to keep their shipbuilding industry going. So it was their timber of choice for the future of the industry. In a worldwide basis, it's very well known as a first-class shipbuilding timber. In New Zealand, they also use it for weatherboards and decking as well as boat building. Unfortunately, in the Western District, we push it up and burn it.
Yes, that's amazing, because I've never heard actually of a boat being made out of cypress. Never.
No, it's fairly rare. Some of the wooden boat builders in the area do use cypress for planking, and in particular the knees, because cypress is well renowned for growing fantastic knees. But it's just completely underutilised here.
It is a very durable timber. We use it at home for fence posts, and we've got a fence post that was put in 1977 and it's still there.
Yeah.
With wires on it and that. It's looking pretty old and dilapidated, but it's still standing and still reasonably solid.
So yeah.
It is a very durable timber.
I think from a technical perspective, it has the same in-the-ground durability rating as red gum. But its other big advantage is it's very stable, and when it's dried from green, it has about 3% shrinkage, whereas the gums are more like 12-14%. So for decking and planking, things like that, it's absolutely exceptional, yeah. Beautiful to work.
Yeah. Well, people cut one tree down and line their whole new house with it.
Wow.
And it's a lovely lining board timber.
Yes.
So it really is.
Very attractive.
It's its botanical name.
Right.
So it burns with a lot of sparks. So if you put it in your open fire, it'll melt at sparks.
Burn the house down. But we should be using more of it. But yes, I was just down at the boat about 15 minutes ago, and the kids are just loving it. They're running around on there with their cutlasses. And so what's it like below decks, Graham?
Well, below decks is pretty well as authentic as it can be. There's just a lot of beautiful timber, lovely big knees. It's going down below that really puts a smile on people's faces, and you know, it's a great thing to be standing on the jetty there, and you see people one after the other come up, and their faces are just alight. We've had numerous people in tears. It's moved them so much. So she's very extraordinary. A lot of the recreations, once you go inside, they're not very authentic. You know, they have a lot of modern appliances and things like that. But in Notorious, you won't see any indication from the last 400 years, not a single wire or light or anything like that. So.
But yeah. I presume you have an engine, do you?
We do have an engine, which we use to get in and out of port. Or, you know, keep us going if there's no wind. Primarily we sail her. She's actually quite fast. We do between 4 and 8 or 9 knots in her, and quite easily managed as we sail her just with the two of us, just my wife Felicity and myself. You know, I understand when people see her, she's a little confronting and confusing looking, but once you're familiar with her, she's actually a very handy sailing vessel.
Yes. Well, you were telling me before, actually, you'd prefer to sail that style of boat to the modern day rigs. And why is that, Graham?
Well, apart from finding modern-day boats very light on the water, we're 58 tonnes, so, you know, we sit pretty heavily in the water. But also Notorious has a lateen rig, which are the types of rig that are used by all the Arab dhows and feluccas. These rigs were borrowed by the Portuguese during the Age of Discovery because they allow for some windward sailing, which is one of the key attributes of the caravel that enabled them to do what they could do. The other bigger ships, which weren't all that much bigger, were all square rigged, so they couldn't save themselves from a lee shore. If they got an onshore wind, they required deep water and big crews and things like that, whereas a caravel was really the first of the fine sailing ships, really.
So more manoeuvrable, really.
Much more manoeuvrable. They're very broad, shallow draft. We only draw 2.1 metres, which is not a lot for a vessel of 58-tonne displacement. They'd often be closer to 3 metres, but you know, the shallow draft is such a fantastic advantage. We've had this ship in all sorts of places that had never seen anything like this before. So,
well, I imagine just about everywhere you go, no one would have ever seen anything like it before.
Yeah, no, she's very unique, that's for sure. And on a global scale, you know, she's probably one of only... There's none in the southern hemisphere. There's 2 or 3 in the northern hemisphere. But I have seen photos of them and been told by other people that they're not really built like an old ship. They're built more cheaply from a commercial perspective for tourism. And we've been told by many people that have been on both of them that Notorious is the most beautiful and authentic of any, which is very high praise.
So could you explain to us what a knee is?
Well, a knee is a grown, bent piece of timber. Sometimes you might find them where a branch comes off the main trunk. And there the grain in the timber comes up the trunk and continues out the branch. We use those to brace joints in the ship to increase the strength and stop the flex of the ship while we're under sail. They're a very important part of the strength of the ship. And they're all cut from grown knees. Often these days they're much smaller and laminated up, but these are beautiful big curved pieces of timber.
Right. There was a fellow down here, an arbor sculptor, that was going to build a boat, by planting trees in the ground and growing them up wires to make the frame of the boat, and then
cut it off.
He said the strength would be so
good. Yep.
And then nailed planks to it.
I hope he started very young.
No, there was only going to be a 7-year project, he said. Yeah, using an American timber.
Yep.
But I can't get them in Australia. I was going to have a go at it, but you can't get them here. So they must be a weedy species, I think.
Things do grow very fast in the Otways, that's
for
sure.
Yeah, but in the whole of Australia, they might have been a problem. Yeah.
So you can grow a boat in 7 years in
apparently,
the Otways.
Apparently, yes. Yeah, well, this fellow had done it, but, you know, this was from America. So anyway.
Well, we're back here in the studio with Graham and Tony. Graham, where to next after Apollo Bay?
We were hoping to head further west and visit Warrnambool and Port Fairy. Unfortunately, it looks like there's going to be a little bit of swell, so Warrnambool doesn't really have, a jetty or protection for us or a berth that would be safe for people to get on and off the ship. It surges very badly in there, and unfortunately Port Fairy hasn't been able to make a berth available for us, so it pretty well knocks it on the head. Following Apollo Bay, we'll head back to Geelong for 2 or 3 weeks while we go and finalise a few things at our house in Bushfield, and then after that we'll be heading up to Sydney.
Okay. And any sort of long-term plans to go to leave Australia? Or I assume that the boat is Australian registered, is that?
That's correct, yep. We plan to go to Sydney, and then we'll go up into Queensland. This year we won't go up as far as the Whitsundays because it'll be getting a little bit late in the season for that. We'll probably stay up there for the summer, and then that'll make us nice and close to spring into the Pacific, and maybe visit Vanuatu and the Solomons during next year.
Well, both fantastic places, and very exciting.
Yes, yeah, we're certainly looking forward to it.
Have you been there before, Graham?
No, we haven't. No, yeah.
It's also fascinating that you can crew this boat with two people. You know, you think of it having, I would have thought it would be 10 people on board to manage a ship of that weight and size.
Yeah, well, we started off with a lot. It really, you can't read anywhere how to sail a ship like this. It was a totally new learning curve. So we started with 6 or 8 on board for our first few voyages. And then we whittled them down. And we handle it quite easily now with just two people.
And no harbour panic, Graham. That's the thing that used to get me. I was fine. I used to live on boats too, and I was fine when I was out in the ocean. But as soon as we got in the harbour, it was like all these things that I can crash into. And if you've got a 58-ton boat that you can ram, you know, $500,000 fiberglass super duper boat with, it's a little scary.
Well, we do actually suffer quite a bit from harbour fear. and coming into a berth, you know, I lose more sleep over that than I would over a Bass Strait crossing or anything. It really is quite a concern for us. Often we get up in the middle of the night when there's no wind. Or alternatively, I'll wait outside. It's not something to be taken lightly.
Absolutely, we were exactly the same.
Yeah, and you know, because she's primarily a sailing vessel, the engine and that is sort of, it's a compromise, so it doesn't have the drive and the steering that, say, you know, a trawler might have of the same size and power. We're steered with a whip staff, which is an upright vertical extension on the tiller. These ships predate wheels on ships by about 100 years.
Oh gosh, that's amazing.
And which is a great thing, the whip staff, but one of the downfalls is that we don't have as much steering lock as conventional boats. We also catch a lot of wind with our high after castle. And combine the two.
That's scary to me.
Yeah, yeah. So it does cause us quite a bit of concern. It's always a lovely thing to come in and berth and be all tied up, yeah.
No bow thrusters there.
No bow thrusters, no stern thrusters, just
Two very brave people.
Well, I'm usually doing the steering, and Felicity has to climb over the gunwale and hang off the outside to get ready to jump off onto the jetty. So,
yes, that was actually described to me when I was down there today. There's also a visiting catamaran in port that they've come from Perth. It's taken them 2.5 years to get here, so they're just meandering. And they were telling me about your wife. They said it was very impressive. They saw her come in and they thought, oh, no, she's going to be squashed between a 58-ton boat and the jetty. But she's obviously done it before.
Yes, yeah. No, I try not to squash her.
She's your only crew.
That's right, yeah. That's right. No, she's vital. So.
And how did you find getting into Apollo Bay Harbour?
Well, we arrived here on Thursday afternoon. There was about a 2.5 metre swell running, so there was quite a break across the entrance. Also, it was just after high tide, so we didn't have much choice other than to anchor out in the bay overnight, which, although quite safe because of the swell that comes in there, was a bit rolly and uncomfortable and that. It had pretty well settled down by the morning. There was only a very slight break across it, so actual coming in was fine. Plenty of water underneath us at high tide, so it wasn't really a problem, except for the wind.
Yeah, well done getting that in here, because some of the fishermen have trouble getting in because we have a sand issue with the sand coming into the harbour.
No, it's got quite a little reputation, Apollo Bay.
As do many of the entrances actually around the coast of Australia.
And absolutely.
Graham, you've mentioned about the east coast, but have you been round to the west at all?
No, we haven't, Deb. We've done 12,000 miles on the east coast in the last 3 years. We've done 3 trips up and down, covering from Hobart to Port Douglas. But we haven't ventured all the way around as yet, no.
And will you, do you think?
Could well do. We generally operate on a fairly short-term plan and just make it up as we're going along. As I said earlier, we're thinking about the Pacific this year. But yes, certainly a circumnavigation of Australia is, you know, definitely on the cards.
Yes, well, we always found it was best to not make too firm a itinerary or plan, because who knows what the weather's going to do, and really, to be safe, you just have to go with the weather.
Yeah, that's right. It's a difficult thing, and often you know, we might be asked to attend boat festivals and things like that, which put a real date on when we have to be somewhere. And, you know, it's a difficult thing to do with a sailing ship to say on this day we'll be here, because that's right, you don't know what's in between here and there.
Yeah, and people that don't live on boats or have much to do with boats don't realise. They think, oh, you could just go anywhere in the world whenever you like. But it is a little more complicated than that, and you really have to plan out what you're going to do.
That's right, yes.
Tony's headed off now, and we've got Rusty sitting in his chair, and he's also an old salt. I think last came off a 52-foot steel catch. And he, of course, is also very interested in this boat, as anyone that sees it will be.
One of the things that occurred to me was that I was looking at the caravel and I couldn't see any difference between the topside colour and the antifoul, and wondered what is it, black antifoul underneath it?
It is, Rusty, yeah. It's just modern antifoul. We pull her out every year, either on a slip or in a travel lift, and keep an eye on the bottom of her and re-antifoul her, yeah.
Yeah, that's quite a big lift for a travel lift at 58 or so ton.
It is. We've found most small ports, even if they've got a fishing fleet and a slip there, usually the trawlers are fairly heavy anyway, so they can manage it. But last time we pulled her out was in Brisbane, and they had a 600 ton lift there. We were pulled out on a 300-ton one, which made Notorious look pretty little, but they do have a 600-ton one there, which is just a gigantic machine.
Massive.
Incredible. Yeah.
We were just going to hear a little bit about that the colour of the boat, the anti-fouling, and how the top sides were painted, or if they're painted, are they painted?
They are indeed painted. They're painted with an oil mixture. It's a 15th century period finish they used to call black varnish, and it is Stockholm tar, pitch and linseed oil mixed together. So, yeah, it's a lovely finish. It's very practical, really low maintenance, even though we need to replace it every 6 to 12 months. Because it's an oil, it doesn't flake or chip, so there's no sanding at all involved. In fact, we don't even wash it. We just get the brush out and put more on. Can be applied with a brush or a roller or a rag or a spray gun or anything. It's very user friendly.
Yeah, Graham, when you get to the tropics, so will it last as long in the tropics, or will you have to do it more often?
I think if we were there in the wet season, we'd probably need to do it more often. One of the characteristics of Stockholm tar is that it is very slightly water soluble. So we find if we're in heavy rain or something for a week or so, it actually goes quite white, emulsified looking, but it quickly cooks out when the weather dries and the sun comes out. Whether it shortens the life of the oil, I couldn't really say.
Another thing occurred to me too, Graham, is that I remember one of the favourite things that I like to do at sea. Anytime I'm at sea, is actually put a lure out the back and try and catch a fish. Are you of the same inclination? Do you?
Well, I have to push myself to do it. Often there's only the two of us on board, and we're sort of doing everything. So I've sort of found when I'm not busy, I like to be just that, not busy, and sit down and do nothing. But we do, you know, sometimes throw a lure over. We've had some good catches, but more often than not, I forget about it, and then it gets wrapped around the prop when I come into anchor, and there goes another lure.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Graham, for coming in and telling us all today about the boat. And I urge everyone to go down and have a look. It really, you know, you won't get this opportunity again probably in the near future to see such a vessel. And the kids absolutely love it. So head on down there. You're in the harbour until at least Monday. You're yes. Open still on Monday.
That's correct, Deb, yes.
So you've got all of today, Sunday and Monday to get down there. So we'll see you there. So thanks again, Graham, and thanks, Rusty. And we'll go back to some music now, and I hope you all have a great Easter.